Israeli forces enter the West Bank.
Israel has undertaken a pretty large-scale operation. Palestinians say it's the largest-scale operation in the West Bank in 20 years, hitting several areas simultaneously.
Plus, immigration is a hot-button issue in the American election.
He's gonna deport them! Yes! I am all for that. Absolutely, get them out of here, and he can do it. He knows how.
And later, an update from Kyiv, heavy rains and flooding in Asia, and Mpox devastates Africa's most vulnerable. Today is Wednesday, August 28th, and this is VOA's Flashpoint. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Israeli strikes in the West Bank killed at least 9 people, Palestinian health authorities said on Wednesday. It's a major operation in the occupied territories. Israeli authorities say the 9 killed were militants and that a large cache of weapons was discovered. The 9 were killed in different areas, in Jenin and near Tubas. Clashes with the Israeli military in the West Bank have risen sharply since the start of the Israel-Hamas war in Gaza, as Israel steps up operations against armed militant groups, including Iranian-backed Hamas and Islamic Jihad. Israeli troops and settlers have killed more than 640 Palestinians since the Gaza war began in October of 2023, while Palestinian attacks have killed at least 19 Israelis. For more, I'm joined by VOA's Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem.
Israel has undertaken a pretty large-scale operation. Palestinians say it's the largest-scale operation in the West Bank in 20 years, hitting several areas simultaneously, refugee camps and the city of Jenin, which is kind of known as one of the places where there are a lot of militants. And the Israeli foreign minister said that some people might have to be evacuated from their homes in the same way that people have been evacuated from Gaza to allow the army to operate. So it seems that, you know, Israeli officials say there's been an increase in attacks on Israelis coming from these areas and that there's been more support for terrorist organizations. And so Israel has kind of launched a pretty wide scale operation in the West Bank, not only airstrikes, but hundreds of soldiers as well.
What was the impetus for the attack and for the incursion into the West Bank? Was it specific intelligence about an upcoming attack?
Well, I think it was more there was an attack that didn't happen last week, in which a man with a backpack of explosives blew himself up, killing only himself. And at first, it wasn't clear if it was criminal or terrorist, but he's from Jenin. And apparently, he was planning to go into a synagogue and blow himself up there.
And what about the ongoing peace talks with Hamas in Gaza? Now, this is the West Bank. It's different, but will this have any effect on those negotiations?
It's hard to tell. I don't think so. I don't think so, because had there been a lot of civilians killed in this operation, and if it continues, you know, for several days, maybe. But the talks, they restarted in Doha in Qatar today, although not with such high level people. And they're still it's still a problem in terms of trying to find a solution for the outstanding issues, which include whether or not there would be an Israeli presence on the border between Gaza and Egypt, what's called the Philadelphia Corridor that we've spoken about several times.
In other news, an Israeli hostage was freed. We talked about that on Tuesday's show. What's the reaction been in Israel?
Well, there was a lot of happiness in Israel. He's a Bedouin man. He actually was, taken to the hospital. He's lost at least 40 pounds, but he's in good health. And he was already released today. He went home to his home in Rahat, which is a Bedouin town in southern Israel, to large cheering crowds and a convoy of cars beeping. And he was, you know, as he left the hospital, he was shaking hands and high-fiving a lot of doctors and everything. And I think it gave people kind of like a boost But the question is whether this is can be what happens to the rest of the hostages.
Linda, we know that the families of the hostages are a very vocal group inside Israel. And clearly the release of this hostage the other day brings more visibility to them. What's their latest attempt to reach the Israeli government to make their position known?
Well, there's a convoy of hostage families that is going down to the border between Gaza and Egypt. They're going to put loudspeakers on a crane, and they're going to try to actually talk to the hostages who are still being held, you know, by telling them that, you know, Israel hasn't forgotten them, that they're still, you know, doing everything they can to get them out. But I think it seems to be more an effort to remind the Israeli public and the Israeli government that there are still more than 100 people being held in Gaza.
VOA's Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem. Linda, thanks for your time today. Thanks for your reporting.
Sure. Thank you, Steve.
Not surprisingly, the war in Israel and Gaza is shaping up to be a major issue in the American election. White House officials say they're finalizing a Gaza ceasefire deal, but even if an agreement is reached, a future U.S. administration would still inherit the problem of managing tensions in the Middle East. VOA's White House bureau chief, Patsy Wita-Kuswara, looks at a potential U.S. policy under Vice President Kamala Harris should she win the November election.
Another deadly Israeli strike on another refugee camp in Gaza as negotiators strive to reach a ceasefire deal in return for the release of Israeli hostages held by Hamas. One of them was rescued on Tuesday. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
Welcome home, Farhan al-Qadi. I congratulate the Israeli army in Shin Bet on another successful rescue operation. We are working tirelessly to bring all our hostages back.
That's a message Vice President Kamala Harris also underscored as she accepted her nomination as the Democratic Party's presidential nominee last week.
President Biden and I are working to end this war such that Israel is secure, the hostages are released, the suffering in Gaza ends, and the Palestinian people can realize their right to dignity, security, freedom, and self-determination.
Outside of her term as vice president, Harris has no foreign policy background. Her national security advisor is Philip Gordon, who served under Democratic presidents including Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, as well as Joe Biden. This signals a continuity with past Democratic administrations, including on military support for Israel, something her former national security advisor reaffirms. Hallie Seufer is now president of the Jewish Democratic Council of America.
The vice president and the president have supported U.S. military assistance to Israel, not just per the existing agreement that we have with Israel, but also an increase this year because of their security needs.
This despite demands from Arab and Muslim Americans, as well as progressive and young Democrats, for an embargo on arms sales to Israel. At the same time, Harris has expressed more sympathy towards Palestinian suffering than Biden has. Political analyst from Bar-Ilan University, Jonathan Reinhold, via Zoom.
We can't learn a lot from what she says, because what she says now is directed to winning an election and to keeping the Democratic Party together. And since the Democratic Party is divided between those who are more sympathetic to Israel and those who are more sympathetic to the Palestinians about evenly, she has to say basically platitudes. And that's what she's done.
Compared to Biden, who often underscores he is a Zionist, Harris, the daughter of immigrants from Jamaica and India, may be more cognizant of views from the global South. Middle East expert Natasha Hall at the Center for Strategic and International Studies via Skype.
She is aware of how the rest of the world may feel about the Middle East, about, you know, neocolonialism, neoimperialism. And I really hope that she has the opportunity to bring those experiences to bear if she becomes the president, because that is the reality of what U.S. foreign policy needs to confront the challenges ahead, which are very different from the challenges of the past three decades.
Should she win in November, Harris will inherit the challenges of her predecessors, including a protracted conflict in the Middle East. She will need to formulate her own foreign policy, a high-stakes, complex affair that juggles multiple interests. Patsy Widokuswara, VOA News, Washington.
Along with the conflict in the Middle East, immigration is one of the top issues for American voters this November, and the difference in policy between the two presidential candidates is stark. VOA's senior Washington correspondent Carolyn Pasciuti begins our story at a dusty desert stop in Arizona.
This was a gold mining town, the richest strike in the state of Arizona at the time.
Now a ghost town.
Yeah.
Patty Burris lives here with Bino, her 38-year-old donkey.
Come here, buddy. There you go.
Burris says she's tired of undocumented migrants sneaking across her land from the Mexican border. Former President Donald Trump gets her vote.
He's going to deport them. Yes, I am all for that. Absolutely, get them out of here, and he can do it. He knows how.
While President Donald Trump ordered that a 740-kilometer wall be built at the U.S. southwestern border, on his first day in office, Joe Biden paused any new construction.
We could have had it completed in 3 weeks. But
Donald Trump returned to an Arizona border wall last Thursday, although the Washington Post reports the section he visited was built before he became president.
Because there's never been a border in the whole world that's leaked like this border, with all those millions and millions of criminals coming through.
Democratic voters at their convention say their party is more tolerant. Sandra Cano moved from Colombia to the U.S. as a teenager.
Immigrants, we belong, the neighbors, we take care of each other. That's really what it's all about.
If elected, Vice President Kamala Harris promises a path to citizenship and the return of a bipartisan immigration bill that died in Congress.
The Border Patrol endorsed it. But Donald Trump believes a border deal would hurt his campaign. So he ordered his allies in Congress to kill the deal.
Back at the ghost town.
So Harris would not control the border as much.
Don't believe a word she says. Where's she been in the last 4 years?
Nobody stops by the old deserted town much anymore. Burris says she'd like to go back to the time when she saw more tourists come through than migrants. Carolyn Pasciuti, VOA News, Pierce, Arizona.
In more immigration news, on Wednesday, Pope Francis strongly decried the treatment of migrants crossing the Mediterranean Sea to enter Europe, saying it's a grave sin not to offer aid to migrant vessels.
In quei mari, in quei deserti mortali, i migranti, gli oceani, non dovrebbero essere.
During his weekly general audience in St. Peter's Square, the Pope called for expanding access routes for migrants and a global governance of migration based on justice, brotherhood, and solidarity. The International Organization for Migration estimates more than 30,000 migrants crossing the Mediterranean have gone missing since 2014. You're listening to Flashpoint from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Mpox is a growing problem in Africa, but the UN now warns there's a particularly high risk for those in refugee camps. That story in a moment. Time now for a look at the effects of Monday's massive area assault on Ukraine by Russia, as Ukrainians are working to get power, water, and transportation back online. Laisa Backletz has more.
Checking generators and stocking up on fuel. Shelters like this one, called Points on Invincibility, are providing support in the wake of Russia's massive air attack. They are places for Ukrainians to power up and more.
After the attack, power outages started at 9 a.m. Then the electricity appeared for 20 minutes. Now it's evening, but there is still no light.
Many visited this Invincibility Center in the town of Hostomel in the Kyiv region.
The light was turned off unexpectedly. People did not have time to prepare. Some came to us for hot water, some to work or charge gadgets.
According to Ukrainian Prime Minister Denis Shmyhal, the Russian attacks affected at least 15 regions. The Ukrainian military said Russia primarily targeted the energy infrastructure.
The situation in the energy sector remains difficult. Russia attacked energy distribution and transmission systems. But energy experts know how to repair the damage. This is no longer the despair as in 2022, when the shelling began.
Other cities, like Zhytomyr, experience water supply problems.
Several rockets hit the energy infrastructure and electricity completely disappeared. The water supply company switched to generators. We could provide water two or three times a day for 2 to 3 hours. Now the situation has improved, but the amount of electricity is minimal.
The Russian attack also caused train delays.
We are currently working to ensure that trains, which are currently delayed by 5 to 7 hours, will go according to their schedule on their way back. But we already understand that at least 3 such trains will leave with a delay.
According to a state-owned electricity operator, Ukrenergo, the attack on August 26th was the 9th to hit the country's energy infrastructure. Ukrainian officials have not disclosed the total scale of damage caused by the Russian strikes. Lisa Bakalets, VOA News.
As we just heard, Ukrainians are working to get utilities and transportation systems back up and running, all while mourning those killed and while suffering from the effects of the recent attacks. Yet the attacks continue. Kryvyi Rih and Izyum were targeted again on Wednesday, leaving at least 5 children hurt. VOA's Anna Chernikova has more from Kyiv.
Early Wednesday, Russian forces launched another missile attack on the Ukrainian city of Kryvyi Rih, as the city is still in mourning after the Russian attack on Tuesday that took the lives of 4 people. Wednesday's attack on the city targeted civilian infrastructure. Local authorities reported 9 people killed. President Zelensky said that the latest attacks across Ukraine are raising again the question of Ukraine's ability to carry out long-range attacks inside Russian territory to prevent further strikes. He said that with help of Ukraine's allies, this is the optimal counter-terrorism tactic. Also, President Zelensky addressed the energy situation. Currently, as a result of the recent bombardments, power outages are widespread across the country and the situation is close to critical. Zelensky said that the repair works are ongoing around the clock. And on Tuesday night, Russian forces attacked the city of Izyum in the Kharkiv region, injuring 12 people, including 5 children. Authorities there confirmed damage to private houses and the bakery factory. Elsewhere in the Kharkiv region, the Ukrainian armed forces report success in their recent counter-offensive actions. Meanwhile, Ukrainian media, citing anonymous sources in Ukrainian intelligence, report that as a result of a joint operation of Ukrainian intelligence and the armed forces of Ukraine, an oil depot in the Rostov region of Russia was hit with Ukrainian-made drones. This facility is part of the Russian military complex and takes a direct part in the provision of Russian troops. As reported by Russian Telegram channels, the fire is still ongoing. Also, the local authorities of the Kirov region in Russia reported a drone attack on an oil depot there as well. Russian media published video of at least 2 hits in Kotelnichi, Kirov region, approximately 1.5 thousand kilometers from the border with Ukraine. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
Elsewhere in Europe, Germany and the UK seek a new bilateral treaty as British Prime Minister Keir Starmer pursues what's being called a reset with the European Union. The AP's Charles de Ledesma reports.
The leaders of Germany and the UK are engaged in close talks on the road ahead. In Berlin, Britain's Keir Starmer is hoping for a quick result.
This treaty is part of a wider reset, grounded in a new spirit of cooperation, with our shared understanding that this will be developed at pace and that we hope to have agreed it by the end of the year.
For his part, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz has said he welcomes fellow centre-left leader Starmer's desire for a new beginning in relations with the EU. Starmer took office in early July after the previous Conservative government was trounced in an election. The two leaders are among Ukraine's biggest military backers and have stressed their commitment to keeping up that support. I'm Charles de Lefesme.
And in Asia, more than 20,000 people have been evacuated amid severe flooding, submerging streets and homes in India's Gujarat state on Wednesday. This as heavy monsoon rains wreak havoc across South Asia. Kiran Raoji, a local resident, said the water came so suddenly that he and his family were unable to collect their belongings from their flooded home. Dozens have died and millions displaced in India and Bangladesh in recent days as devastating floods caused by monsoon rains continue to plague the region. Meanwhile, in Japan, the country is braced for Typhoon Shanshan, with heavy rains and strong winds expected to strike Kyushu Island in the country's southwest. The typhoon is expected to approach Japan's central and eastern regions, which includes Tokyo, around the weekend. And finally today, UN agencies warn that refugees and displaced communities in the Democratic Republic of Congo and other African nations infected with Mpox are at particular risk of illness and death because of the conditions under which they're forced to live. VOA's Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The World Health Organization reports at least 42 suspected cases of Mpox have been identified within the displaced population in Democratic Republic of Congo's South Kivu province, one of the regions hardest hit by the disease. Confirmed and suspected cases of the new Clade 1B strain also have been recorded among refugee populations in the Republic of the Congo and Rwanda. Dr. Alan Maina, the United Nations Refugee Agency's public health chief, says more suspected cases are being reported in conflict-impacted provinces in eastern DRC. That region hosts the majority of the country's 7.3 million internally displaced people. He warns the virus threatens to worsen the plight of millions of people devastated by decades of conflict who have been forcibly uprooted from their homes and subjected to human rights abuses. He adds that people fleeing violence are unable to implement many of the Mpox prevention measures that could keep them healthy and save their lives.
With this, we see that displaced families living in crowded schools, shelters, and tents, and also in churches, and also in farmers' fields, and they have no space to isolate when they develop symptoms of the disease. UNHCR staff have found in some afflicted individuals trying diligently to follow preventive measures and protect their communities, including by sleeping outside.
Today, the World Health Organization reported more than 18,000 suspected and confirmed cases of Mpox, with 615 deaths in the Democratic Republic of Congo so far this year. It says more than 220 cases of the new strain Clade 1B have been found in the DRC's neighbors. WHO spokesperson Dr. Margaret Harris says the disease is spreading quickly, noting that 5,400 suspected cases have been recorded in North and South Kivu as of August. She says refugees and displaced people are at particular risk.
Just heard about the description of the conditions under which people are living and have arrived in very, you know, already very stressed, hungry, terrified, displaced. So that gives an there's an immunological deficit. There's an immunological weakness, which makes them more likely to become more ill with anything they get, including Mpox.
Mpox is spread through close physical contact. Harris says this makes children particularly vulnerable as the disease spreads easily through skin-to-skin contact. She says children who have close physical contact with an infected adult relative cannot fight off the virus because of weaker immune systems. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that's going to wrap it up for us today. There is more VOA coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for listening. Until tomorrow, I'm Steve Karish.
For deeper dives and expert analysis, listen to VOA Podcasts. Issues in the News explores the biggest stories every weekend, while International Edition keeps you informed every weekday. Plus, with a 5-minute newscast at the top of every hour, you're always up to date.